This talk was recorded by Insight Meditation South Bay. For more talks and information, visit www.imsb.org.
So, emotions and feelings, that's quite a range of topics. And, you know, I just want to say, we can think about it really, it's helpful to think about the whole range. So, strong emotions like anxiety and fear. And then what kind of shades into what Buddhism calls mind states, you know, just sort of maybe attitudes, moods, more subtle colorings of the mind that influence what we're doing. The word feeling has a technical meaning in Buddhism that I'm not going to talk so much about tonight, but I just want to let you know the feeling tone refers to the basic pleasant or unpleasant or neutral aspect of experience, and that's sort of the little seed that often triggers the whole blow up of emotion. So it's actually important, but I may use the word feeling more generally this evening, just to in the way that we usually do. I'll try to be clear which way I'm talking about it. So as you may have begun to realize, those of you who are new, Buddhism is studying the processes of being a human mind and body so that we can discern what the patterns are that lead to more suffering and less suffering. And Buddhism, of course, begins by acknowledging that there is suffering, the first noble truth. There is not getting what we want, there's getting what we don't want, there's losing what we thought we had. You know, there's a very ordinary list of the kind of things that happen to us. And until we begin to have some insight into the deeper nature of reality and the patterns of typical human mind and body encountering these conditions, it will tend to give rise to suffering. So the so-called afflictive emotions like anger, anxiety, despair, longing, envy, for many of us, those are the most obvious features of the experience of suffering. In fact, it might be some of those experiences that brought you to meditation. Emotions are complex phenomenon compounded of mental and physical sensations, and often it gets going in an unnoticed spiral between thoughts and bodily discomfort, and it builds and builds and builds, and then we start fighting with it, and it gets to be quite a phenomenon of suffering. Now, in the practice, we're not trying to get rid of emotions. There are profound, meaningful, and appropriate responses to life, right? Many feelings that could be considered emotions are feelings like love and joy and the kind of strength and conviction that it takes to stand up to injustice, right? And there are wholesome and cleansing and healing forms of sadness and grief that are appropriate in the face of loss. Even maybe the temporary arising of fear and a flash of anger might be part of the cognitive processing that gets us to take appropriate action. But these wholesome and short-lived feelings, they tend to be able to coexist with a clear mind and an open heart and with confidence and strength in the body. So they're movements of opening to life that are really rooted in wisdom and compassion. But in contrast, what we might call the reactive emotions, they're deeply ingrained habits to reacting to those feeling tones of pleasant and unpleasant with grasping and aversion, just automatically. So anxiety, a hostile kind of anger, resentment, blaming, guilt, shame, longing, these things, when they arise, they tend to consume our attention. They blow up and take over the whole mind. They block our access to wisdom and they narrow our perspective down to that particular situation that's happening and things just like it that come to mind. They can actually tend to close our heart. They tend to block our breathing in some way and cause us to clench up our bodies. So in the Buddhist analysis, these are movements of grasping and clinging, pushing away and attacking. And they're rooted in these deep-seated misconceptions about reality. You know, basically that it ought to be possible to get everything lined up and just the way we want it, and it ought to stay that way, and if that's not happening, there's something wrong with us, right? Or something wrong with somebody else. But that's the basic move that we don't understand. You know, something about reality. And then, although, so these movements our ways, their attempts to find safety and happiness, right? But they're old strategies, childhood strategies, and just strategies that are simply haven't seen enough of how reality works to know how to work. And so they reflect, the emotions often get tangled up and reflect the frustration that we're grabbing at the wrong direction because we really can't get it to work that way. So I want to talk mostly about how we're working with the experience of emotion when it comes upon us and how we can use mindfulness and other aspects of the Buddhist teachings. You may have heard there's a pretty well-known formula called RAIN. Have you heard of that before? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but I recently heard a variation on that I like a lot from Tanya Weiser, who's a friend, called RAFT. And it's very similar, but I also like the idea of the raft because one of the Buddhist metaphors for reaching the end of suffering is crossing the flood. And so often emotions are like that. It just feels like you're being flooded, you know, with stress chemicals and so forth. And so we can use these factors of the raft to cross the flood. So the first one, the first step is the same in raft and rain. The R stands for recognition. And that sounds easy, but really that's the biggest part. If we can recognize that we're in the grips of something, that something is going on. What it really means is noticing that right now, just the very sort of thing that maybe brought you to meditation is happening. And this right now is an example of what you can turn to and start working with it. So, you know, usually we're so carried away by the currents, the storm, the flood of reactivity. We can be sitting on the cushion just furiously thinking and somehow thinking that we're meditating, but we're thinking about everything else that's going on and this and that and the other. And we're all stirred up or just even mildly stirred up, but we don't even notice that. And then let alone in life, when something happens, it's often many, many kind of unfortunate reactions and perhaps acting out in some way down the line when we finally realize that something's going on. So recognizing is tremendously important. And sometimes it's not even obvious that an emotional reaction is happening. Do you know the story of the arrows? That's a favorite Buddhist parable. So, you know, if you get hit by an arrow, it hurts, right? And then the Buddha asks his disciples, and what if you get hit by a second arrow in the same place? Oh, that's worse, right? And so there's a couple ways to understand this. The usual way to understand it is the secondary reactions, the emotions about emotions that we bring to bear. So, you know, something happens that makes you anxious, and then you're anxious, and the next thing is, oh, I hate being anxious. And then, oh, I'm such an idiot for being anxious, and how come I can't stop this? Oh, I'm such a loser, and it goes on and with all these arrows. But there's also the arrow of simply repeating over and over again the original stimulus. You know, somebody said something to you this morning that hurt your feelings. How many times in the day do you replay that? You know, that's just, over and over again. And the poor body doesn't know the difference, right, between the original and all the repetitions that you put on it. So this is going on all day. So sometimes we're so lost in all that it's a long, long journey to come back to what the original situation was. But if we can turn from acting out and turn from all our various strategies of repressing it to recognize that something's happening and that this is a moment that we're learning a new way to work with. So we bring attention into the present. We turn inward to look at what's going on with this emotion. It's important also to do something to connect part of your attention to the present. So the trouble with emotion is we tend to get completely merged in it. It's taken over the whole screen of the mind. And so we need to find some way to recognize that this is a phenomenon that's happening in the present moment, along with a lot of other stuff. You know, I was reminded recently of Joseph Goldstein's famous saying that he would always tack on to whatever he's telling himself, and the sky is blue. You know, oh, that's terrible, they all hate me, I'm such a loser, and the sky is blue. You know, if you can look out and see the sky being blue, that's great. If you can look at a tree, feel your feet on the ground, take a few breaths, just to put it in the context. I think of it, I'm being a computer person, I think of it like, you know, an application that's taken over the whole screen. And you think that's all it can do, you know. And you just want to get somehow a little bit, you just want a little bit of edge around it so that you know, no, this is just one thing that's happening. And there's still, you know, all the other aspects of your life and who you are and what might happen. Then, if you can, it helps to name it. You know, it's like naming the dragon. So, and I'll say a little more about this. You know, just anything, you know, oh, anger. It can help to get the right name, but you don't have to get hung up on that. Initially, just recognizing, okay, this is happening, and this is what it is. And sometimes this is enough. If you can really do this, and especially if it's a lightweight thing or it's something that you've seen before, just recognizing it can be enough not to let it continue to blow up. But the next step, the A, is accepting. And this is really the heart of the matter, is turning from fighting with it, turning away from trying to make it stop, to accepting it. And there's a lot of very interesting underlying kind of beliefs that it's useful to take on to help you do this. It was a real turning point for me in my practice when I decided that I really understood that everything happens due to conditions. And so if I'm feeling a certain way, it's because there are reasons. You know, something happened that it's the response of this body to feel angry or anxious about it. And the whole history of the universe leading into my personal history and everything that happened has caused this reaction. And so I don't need to feel ashamed of it or guilty about it. Instead, I can feel curious about, okay, so this has happened, you know, so this acceptance. Acceptance does not mean that we're just going to be a doormat for whatever, you know, difficult, abusive situations might be happening, for injustice. It means that we're going to stop fueling our personal exaggerating reaction to this emotion. We're going to try to calm down, get some wisdom and perspective before we do whatever is necessary to do in the world. Sometimes, you know, so much of the actual difficulty in emotion is our efforts to get away from it, to combat it, to escape it, to not feel it, to run away from it. So I really, these days I'm really liking the word dignity, that I'm just going to turn to it, I'm going to turn to face it, and I'm going to sit there with a sense of dignity that, okay, this is what's happening. You know, and I can just show up with that attitude and feel it for a while, and then move on into a little more investigation of what it's about. So can you simply be there with a gentle, accepting, kind feeling toward this part of you that's having this experience? I've been studying this focusing, which is a different method of working with these same issues, and they teach an interesting distinction. See if this makes a difference to you, between saying, I'm angry, and I'm sensing something that's angry. You know? Not so much, you don't need to worry about what something, you know, like there's a thing, because it's a process that has every potential to change. It's not a thing exactly, but yet it is a part of you, you know? And so you can be kind to that part of you. It might be a youthful part of you, or an inexperienced part of you, or a really hurt part of you. And so, you know, I'm sensing this. That gives you the I who's bigger than what's happening, that is sensing it, that's not quite entirely immersed in it. And then that sense of kind of kind open-heartedness toward the suffering part. Sometimes it actually helps if you can feel a physical body to bring a hand to where it's hurting, you know, the chest, the belly, keep you in contact with the body. So there are a lot of typical moves that we do that are not exactly acceptance. As I mentioned, rehashing the original incident over and over and over again. Adding your favorite arrows, arguing with it, you know, stirring up shame and guilt for not being able to make it stop, blaming other people. My favorite is always distraction, running to the refrigerator and, you know, the movies. leaping to generalizations. I'm always trying to figure out the whole world and whether mankind is a good idea or a bad idea based on, you know, they didn't deliver my package on time today. They said they delivered it and it's not there. Therefore, it's the end of civilization and what am I going to do about that? I can go there so easily and it's become kind of funny, but I don't know. I can get into it sometimes, you know. So, so when that happens, what's interesting is to turn to recognizing that reaction, which is really another thread that's come in. And you can see that too, because we don't have to stop anything in this mindfulness practice. We just recognize it for what it is and try to just keep some part of our eyes above the water, you know. So, okay, what's happening is there's a very bunch of anxiety going on here. And there's hatred of being anxious. And there's fear that I can't stop it. Those are three different things that are going on. And you can just, in acknowledging those three, what we usually do is we identify strongly with the anxiety and the hatred, and then the anxiety and then the hatred. And we're in this ping pong match in the mind, completely absorbed in one and then the other. And that's, you know, it's a kind of isometric stress in the brain that is, there's no hope. And so if you can just get bigger and recognize these pieces of the situation with empathy to both of them, they both have, you know, they both have their conditions, their reasons for being there. So we're letting in both the emotion and the reaction to it. And sometimes you have to kind of work at finding the right way to be with it. I like some metaphors sometimes when I'm very upset, like you might be holding a very fussy child on your lap. You know, you're just kind of, okay, okay, okay. And it's moving all around. I'm waving my arms around like, you know, it's all over the place. And you're just kind of, okay, 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 gathering it in and just letting it be there. Sometimes if it's really overwhelming, you might need to, you know, put it over there. It's like, okay, this whole situation, you don't have to go into it right now. It's a situation for sure, and it's kind of there. And, you know, just any way to get a little space around recognizing what's going on. So then once you sort of have the emotional situation, once you're in contact with it, then you can, in the raft formulation, you really feel your way into it. You can, as much as feels safe to you, you know, you keep it at a place. The important thing is to keep that not completely drowning in it, so a little bit of space around it. And if it's possible, then you start to kind of hang out with it and begin to really look at all the elements of it, especially separating the mind and the body. So beginning to notice what thought patterns are going on in the mind and what does this really feel like in the body? How is this whole situation landing in your body? You know, are you tensing in the chest, gripping in a, you know, acid stomach feeling? What's going on? And then you can also fully acknowledge that there's a feeling tone, typically of unpleasant. But there's also situations where you can just get totally carried away with, you know, wanting something, right? And you might think it's pleasant if you're not really investigating. You know, you've just seen the latest computer or a beautiful person or something, and it's just, oh, I have to have this. Life will be perfect if I have this. And so then you might really need to notice, oh, what is it that's so pleasant about this? It's this little picture of me driving that car or and everybody liking me for it or something like that. And that's the pleasant part, but the body's all, ugh, which is actually unpleasant. You know, and so teasing these things apart is very much part of what we need to learn to do. I remember when I first started to practice, I had a very abrupt and unpleasant breakup situation with a boyfriend at that time. And I remember seeing so clearly, you know, I was crying and I just started to practice, but I really got it, and I was thinking, okay, let me just be with this. And I was feeling the tears. At one point, I was in the shower. It's kind of interesting crying in the shower, you know, because what's the crying and what's the shower? And so I got interested in that. And then the more I would really get interested in that, the less I was actually suffering. And then my mind would go back to, oh, if only, oh, what, you know, oh, we'll never do that plan we had or that plan. And then I would be so sad. And then I really began to notice, okay, you know, this is the mind choosing to go in a direction that causes more suffering. And this is being with what has come to pass, which I have no control over, and letting the manifestation of it work its way through the body. And so that was a real early lesson for me in the power of this kind of practice. So as you hang out with it, you can keep checking back with, are you still in the now? Can you still feel your feet on the ground? Can you still recognize that this is a phenomenon? Or have you drifted entirely into believing generalizations about yourself and how everything's always going to be this way? Maybe your sense of acceptance has shifted into using your favorite strategies to, you know, make it stop or figure it out or solve the problem in some way. You might check if the name that you gave it, if you said, oh, this is anger, is that really it? Has that shifted, or is there something that's behind that, for example? The other day I was kind of angry with myself. I had a meeting, and I was just in a bad mood after the meeting, and I was saying, okay, I'm angry, but it didn't really make any sense. Why would I be angry? But I felt kind of angry, and then I said, oh, no, it's frustration. And that was a little closer. Okay, frustration. And then just, I didn't have to think about this, but it just crossed my mind that I had meant to, actually to tell a funny story. I had a story, you know, all lined up to tell him, and I forgot. And I'm realizing that, oh, it's actually disappointment. Because I was looking forward to sharing this story, and I didn't. And I was actually kind of mad at myself for causing this disappointment. It's silly, but when I finally nailed exactly what it was just, oh, it just, the whole thing just evaporated, because it was like seen and understood exactly what it was. So learning, you know, we often say be in the body and feel it in the body. That's a really subtle thing. Over my years of practice, I keep refining what it means to be in the body and what we can feel in the body. So it's not, we always talk about the stomach and the chest and the jaw and places that are kind of relatively easy. But there's all kinds of subtle stuff there. You know, our emotions and attitudes are reflected in our posture sometimes, or in how we're just numb. Parts of our bodies are numb. It might be the most significant thing that you can't feel that part of your body at all, you know. So it can be useful to do a body scan and see where, how are you holding? You can kind of almost exaggerate the emotion sometimes, like you were in a play acting it out to see how, what are you doing? Sometimes I've played with, if you can do this, taking the opposite, like when I'm feeling very, very fearful, you know, or anxious, I'll just take a very brave and courageous kind of hands on my hips stance and just feel, and that, well, often that feels, oh, you know, I don't want to do that. And then I realize, oh, where, well, okay, what's with that? You know, there's a certain energy pattern that doesn't want to move, and there's, it's like a habit of being all bent over. And it's very interesting to explore, you know, how your mind, your mental attitude and beliefs is reflected in your body. And I found so often, over and over again, that when I can really see that connection, that's when the real transformation starts to happen. When you can connect a belief or an attitude or a habit of mind with a particular physical manifestation of it. And then you can kind of play with the physical of it and play with the belief system, and gradually it begins to move. So really this is what we're trying to do, you know. We're trying to let in some motion and let in some change. And emotion means move out, right? That's what they're trying to do, is move through you. So investigation, or feeling your way into it, is a rich area. And then the last element, in the RAIN formula, it's called non-identification, but I like the other formula, or the RAF formula. T stands for trust. You know, because really what this last element is, whatever you call it, is letting in some wisdom, you know. It's using this experience of exploring this emotion to deepen your wisdom about what, in what way are you trying to get reality to be how it just isn't. And how can you shift to looking at your relationship to what's happening so that you can find some ease and some peace with things as they are, you know. And when I say that, I don't mean in a grim, resigned sort of way. I mean, there's a real joy in knowing that you are on the right path, that you're aligning your intentions in life with the truth of how things are and with what's really possible. And it's a great sense of ease and security knowing that you have some skills for working with whatever happens. You know, it's like the difference between buying more and more particular insurance policies for every single thing that can't be wrong and then insuring the insurance policies. And, you know, you can quickly go nuts or you can kind of have this blanket intention that, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to work with my response to what's happening so that there's less suffering. So this trust, it is involving non-identification because it's not taking it personally, and it's an extremely helpful move to realize that this is a common human emotion and that other people have the same reaction in the same circumstances. Other people would, other people are at this moment having that reaction. And so to expand it, that why me question, you know, oh, it's something wrong with me that this is happening and I should be able to fix it. To expand this to know this is a standard human reaction to this response. And let me understand it, not only for my own sake, but for the sake of, you know, understanding other people and being able to help other people understand how to work with these things. It's possible that emotions can really transmute or transform when they're really seen, you know. So there's quite a difference, especially just letting things settle naturally, not trying to make anything happen, but contacting it, staying with the physical sensation. So anger, for example, is a very different experience when it's kind of up here, you know, strangling you, compressing your heart, making you hold your breath. It's very different, and it's a panic response, and then, of course, you want to hit out because you're really holding your breath and you can't breathe. But if you can let it can settle and settle and settle, and it can really transform into a kind of strength. You know, that's what we want. We need a sense of strength and confidence and a strong spine and, a little bit lower in the body. The same kind of feeling, say, meeting some outrageous example of injustice. You know, if you kind of turn it on yourself in a way that hurts yourself, it's not so useful. But it can transform into this feeling of strength and confidence that we can do something with. Anxiety. You might think, what in the world could anxiety turn into that's any good, right? But I've found over and over again that anxiety is really, it's strong medicine, but it's really a pointer at how much we're clinging to trying to be perfect, trying to make everything work out, trying to be the one who, you know, has the perfect image that nobody could ever question, or I'm the one who has all the answers, or I should be, you know, not that you are. But you're somehow hanging on in an unwise direction. You're holding yourself apart from experience, holding yourself apart from how things are. And so if you can look at anxiety as a kind of a wisdom bell, that what am I buying into here that has to happen? Then I found that sometimes it can relax, especially if you can really think about how common this is, you know, in these days and all days, as far as I know, but anyway, that people are suffering from this. And so if you can kind of slowly let yourself down into the warm pool of common humanity and the reality that, you know, we're imperfect beings, we can share that with each other, we don't have to have everything be perfect. So in a way, anxiety transmutes into compassion, and it transmutes into honesty and truthfulness, and humility in a good sense. You know, it's too bad that humility has to go through humiliation to get there sometimes, but it seems that it does. So you can kind of peel off, you're kind of peeling off from this overly idealistic view of what you ought to be able to do, you know, and kind of getting a little more realistic. So this is a real journey of exploration, you know, this acceptance, feeling, and learning what you can trust here. It's really reconciling our innermost needs with the nature of reality. And, you know, the Buddha's very clear that they're not irreconcilable. We can reach great degrees of freedom and peace and equanimity, even though things are not the way we would like them to be. Once we turn away from this obsessive and fruitless trying to have everything be our way, you know, and really making it the main mission of our life to learn how to be okay with things as they actually are, and living with our fellow imperfect people, meeting whatever we can meet. So those are my thoughts on working with emotions and feelings.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.